Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how are you doing?
I am doing well, man. Getting excited about next week. We're going on a road trip, headed to Dallas for the ASTD thing. We are going to be in the booth, but we're going to be the booth, I think, for training pros out there.
That's right. We got three fun-filled days in Dallas, Texas.
I know. Usually we do, maybe 30 interviews over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. We'll probably do 30 interviews in 3 days.
3 days, yeah, at least.
So that's going to require a lot of espresso. So, but I'm really looking forward to that. But this is going to be a fun segment today. We have a studio full. We have the pleasure of several of our friends in the public relations arena that help us find great, exciting guests that are passionate about what they're doing and out there doing good work. And we want to help them get the word out about it.
Absolutely.
So first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce CEO from Mone Wright & Associates, Dr. Sandra Wright. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Doctor of what, and what are you doing out there for folks?
I do corporate training, so I want to be at ASTD. ASTD.
Well, come on, go with us.
As well.
You can take lead spot. Yeah. He's not really that good anyway.
And I do performance improvement for organizations. And performance improvement is about going into an organization and looking at gaps, the different gaps that may be hindering their professional success or performance success.
Now, how'd you get started?
Well, I actually started in healthcare doing performance improvement and being on different teams and facilitating different teams and actually doing training after I performed the performance improvement programs.
Lots of room for work there still?
Yes.
Performance improvement in the healthcare area.
There's good job security in that. People aren't performing optimally typically.
A lot of times what a client will ask me to come in first for training, to do training. And
right.
What I ask them is if I could come in and take a survey and actually do a needs assessment to see if they really, really need training or something else. So the something else may be a skill gap analysis. Maybe someone is not performing up to their best ability. Maybe it may be a communication issue instead of just throwing training at people.
Oh, so the client sometimes thinks training is the solution, but you really got to dig a little deeper.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And then what are some of the questions in that survey that help you bubble up, what their real need is?
One of the things I ask is, how did you start? Why did you want to start with training? How did you get to this point? And a lot of times they'll say, well, it's a communication issue, so we want communication training. And it may not be communication training. It may just mean that the person doesn't know how to perform their jobs. They may need some standard operating procedures. So I go in and ask to talk to some of the people that they want to do training.
Oh, so then they think, Bob needs training.
And then can you fix Bob?
Right, because Bob's broken. And then you go talk to Bob. Bob's like, I don't even know what I'm to do. Never got a good kind of, they never told me what my job is.
So. Absolutely.
Does that happen?
Yes, it does.
In big companies, small companies, across the board?
All kinds of companies.
Really?
Kinds of companies. Big, small, medium-sized companies.
That's kind of amazing.
It's a little scary.
Right.
Yeah. A few months ago, I had a contract with a board of education. I'm not going to say which board of education, but they were having some communication issues, and they wanted to do a communications class for all of their school bus drivers. They say their school bus drivers needed a communication class. And actually, what I did, I started talking to some of the school bus drivers, and what they were saying is that we don't really know what we're supposed to be doing. Some of our job description says this, and something says this.
Right.
And actually what they ended up doing is having me to put together a manual, procedures manual for them.
A procedures. That's fascinating.
I remember precisely how my bus driver communicated with us. He would slam on brakes and open the door till everybody shut up.
Get out.
Right. Close Start the walking. Door and then you got right. And then you'd be walking the rest of the year if you didn't behave. But I'm sure the rules are a little bit different these days. So when you go into these businesses, how do you though design training for a bus driver one day and for someone in the medical field the next? You're smart and you're a doctor and all that, but I mean,
how do you know what the
rules
are?
Where do you get the information?
Yeah.
Well, talking. It takes a lot of talking to the people that are actually doing the job, not the people that hired me for the training, because they'll come in and say, well, I want training. Is this the best choice? And I'll say, can I talk to the people that you want the training done for? And so a lot of times with doing that, I find that there are different things that are needed. And sometimes training is, it just is training that's needed.
Right.
Other things. Yeah.
But when you're talking to the person that's doing the work, as opposed to the leader of the company that's telling them, or in their mind, they think they have an idea of what work should be done. Does the leader open to that? Or is it, doesn't a lot of
times. Sometimes.
The leader's like, look, this is my expectation. In my head, this is how it's supposed to work. And then you talk to the person that's actually on the front lines doing the work, and they're doing something totally different.
Sometimes the leaders agree with me, and they'll let me come in and do the needs assessment. Sometimes they say, well, I just want training, no matter what. I don't care what else is happening. And so in that case, I do just go ahead and do the training.
Right. You know? But that's probably not your best clients in the long term, right?
Right, right. But what I'll do, I'll sit down and talk to some of the people, and they say, well, what? Another training class? Another training class? Right. Really?
So, how much training do I need?
How much training do I need? And has this training really, I take a look at and say, has this training really transferred? And a lot of times it hasn't transferred. They just went to training. And so they'll come and start talking to me and just really giving me some insight on what's going on. And I will take it back to the powers that be, the CEO or whoever, vice president, that have brought me in as their representative. And sometimes it is not training that's
right.
Needed.
So, and it's a disconnect of the expectations and the reality of the situation. How do you kind of measure success and like where's the accountability? Like when they say, okay, I want training, you're really trying to get what they're trying to accomplish, right? And then training might be the tool to use, but it might be, like you say, the manual might be a better tool to use. So how do you measure success?
When they call back and say, the people that are working for me, they're more productive. We're turning over 75% more, whatever, than we did before you came in.
So help us a little bit from the other side of the desk, if you will. How do you go about hiring the right training resource? Because I'm under the impression, you know, there are a lot of folks out there that have a shingle out as being trainers or organizational development people or consultants. I don't know. If we were going to hire someone to come in and do training here at Business Radio X for our staff, I wouldn't know how to conduct that interview. I don't even know what questions to ask. I don't know how to evaluate. Pick you over
Bob. How would you hire you?
How would I hire me? That's a good question.
I mean, or what should we be looking for, I guess, or what questions should we be asking?
You would look at for some of the clients that they've had in the past, what kinds of percentage rates that they've had done once the training is done. You also take a look at maybe how the training has transferred, if that is what they did.
Right.
You'd look at the business bottom line, what the impact of the processes have been that you put together for them. So,
what about if they've written a book?
Such as myself.
He's trying to, he's trying to tee
trying
you
to,
up.
Trying to set you up.
Welcome to the Sandra Wright infomercial.
That would be one of the things, too. That would be good, too.
Well, no, I mean, it does go to credibility and all that kind of thing. Right. If you have someone with a book. But is that how it happens for you, though? Do people call you, and is that how you get your business, or do you also have to be trainer, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and marketeer Tuesday and Thursday, or what?
When I came out, when I started out, I did a lot of cold calling, and that didn't get it.
Ouch.
Yeah. Word of mouth.
That works really, better?
Referral, yeah.
So you used to just call, hey, you need some training?
I would send in different little thick packets. I would send in to different people that I've met along the way, and I would try to actually send them to the gatekeeper, which I call the secretary, the administrative professional. And a lot of times people going through that door will get me to the CEO, but just those packets got to be so expensive. So once I got
you
my
found
foot
a better
in the door,
way.
Yeah, referrals are much better. Yeah.
Okay, I do want to hear about this book, though. It's not out yet, but it's coming out. Is that accurate?
Yes.
What's it about? What compelled you to write it? Are
going
you crazy?
Through,
isn't that a lot of work?
Yeah, it is. But it's a stepping stone for someone that's really starting out. And one of my favorite chapters is doing home-based business, and I talk about that because it's a funny chapter, and I talk about how my family just got on my nerves when I was writing this book and saying to me, do you really have a business because you have a home-based business? My business.
Oh, like it doesn't count?
Absolutely, like it doesn't count.
Right.
And so my husband would say, well, can you pick up the dry cleaning? My sister would say, can you pick up somebody
from
the airport?
Well, since you're home, you're probably not doing anything, right?
Absolutely.
Because you're working out of the house.
Absolutely. And then my husband would say, well, can you go and do something for the kids over here? So everybody had a piece of my time.
Right.
And it was like, wait a minute, I have a business here. And so they didn't really take me serious until I got my first paycheck. And it was like, okay, that's a pretty big paycheck. That's what you've been doing at home. So, yeah.
And the name of the book?
12 Steps to Entrepreneurship.
Oh, okay, so it's all about entrepreneurship. So share a little bit more, a couple of those steps, if you will. What's the toughest step, you think? The first one?
Well, it sounds boundaries is a tough step.
That was one of them. Getting, partnering with different social media like Facebook, that's one of
the... Oh, so you had to start doing kind of the social media to help you get the word out about what you were doing.
Right.
But you can't do it in a salesy, overt way where you got to be more educational and thought leader.
Yeah, and so I'm attached to Facebook and LinkedIn, some other different blogs, et cetera.
So do you have some sort of grand marketing plan for the book beyond, I mean, we mentioned on this interview, maybe you're done. I don't know.
It.
But is there some grand marketing plan to get it out there in the hands of entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs?
Not yet. I am seeking.
You're looking for help.
Looking for an agent?
I'm looking for agents, yeah. I really am.
Lee wrote a book. Lee can help you.
We all wrote books. So
Did you?
You have to write a book to be in radio.
She's writing a book that she wants someone to read.
Oh, yeah. That's a
little, all of mine are in Mom's garage.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about the process of writing this book. Was the husband help? Was it, look, go out, get pizza for the kids, give me 2 hours alone, or did you like block
you
off time?
Starbucks? Like, where did this happen?
After I started getting the door slammed in my face, I started thinking, you know, what can I do to make this better for me? And so I started a journal, and I took that journal and made it into a book, basically what the steps I had to go through, the steps of incorporating my business, what I had to deal with, standing in line, trying to get a business license, those kinds of things.
Oh, so you took it down to that.
Oh, nice.
That really be the beginning of the beginning.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
No, I would think that how-to element would be really strong. When's it coming out?
August. Hopefully August.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. No.
You gotta have a great marketing person. I'm trying to.
You got
to
get all the hedging language out of there, right? That's the final chapter. Do not hedge.
That's right. You got to go all in.
So if our listeners want to learn more about you and your work, or they want to get their hands on this book when it comes out, or maybe pre-order multiple cases of books, what's the title of it?
12 Steps to Entrepreneurship.
Yeah, if they want to get multiple cases of 12 Steps to Entrepreneurship, what's the best
that
way
would
for
be
them
great.
To... What's the best
way
right for
now,
to reach
it? Well, right now, I am under construction. My website is under construction. So right now, my email address is Monet_Wright. That's M as in Mary, O-A, N as in Nancy, E-Y, _Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, @yahoo.com.
And then you have Facebook. You said you do those kind of things?
Yes.
So your Facebook page, or that's your personal Facebook page?
I have a Facebook page.
For your business?
Mm-hmm.
So what's that?
You would. My mind just went.
Well, they could probably search for your name under
Sandra
Facebook.
Sandra Monet, right? Yes. Yes.
All right.
All right. Well, we'll get that posted on the post too when we post this this interview in the archives. We'll get that posted.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for being with us. It's been an absolute delight having you, and we got to have you come back after you've been at it for a little while. And maybe you can tell us some stories of people that have read the book and some feedback from that.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, listen, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I sure will.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from Alice Park Photography, Alice and Caillou Park. Welcome.
It's actually Q Park. Sounds like the letter Q.
You know, and I asked him that before we went on air. How do you pronounce it? What I didn't ask him is how would you like me to pronounce it?
All right, those are two separate things.
I've heard that plenty of times. It's a good icebreaker.
So, Alice and Q, welcome to the show. We'll start with you, Alice. Tell us a little bit about how this business got off the ground.
I went to school for engineering, and my first job out of school as an industrial engineer, I went to work, and I was just incredibly unsatisfied with what I was doing. And so I would just stare out the window, and I just kept thinking there must be something more to my life than doing this every day. And so I always had a passion for photography, always learning, always had a camera in my hand. And right about that time was when I met this wonderful guy who we were not, he didn't have a relationship or anything at the point, but he had a very strong business background. And I shared with him my love for photography, and he said, okay, well, let's do something together. And so with his background in business and my love and creativity and what I did, we just kind of strum up some information and kind of went about it organically and started this business together. So
what's the business?
Well, who's the guy?
The guy actually is sitting right beside me.
Oh.
We actually ended up getting married.
I didn't know if Q knew them.
No, I was thinking about
no,
it.
That would not be a good segue into this. But our business is a photography boutique business. I specialize in capturing children and families and creating these beautiful storybook albums for them in the end.
So it's not just a portrait.
No.
It's more candid and to capture their personality and,
right.
and really their essence mm-hmm. more so than just a moment in time.
Exactly. Yeah, I spend a good bit of time with them, and really my style is more lifestyle and photojournalistic. So I strive to really capture their story at this particular time in their life.
So how, as an engineer, where I would imagine you have to be real precise and structured, do you move into something that seems more unstructured and chaotic and random?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing storytelling through photography.
Right, right.
How did you marry those two
well,
concepts?
Well, I've always been incredibly right-brained, so going to school for engineering was a huge struggle for me. I did it, I think, more so for my parents' sake. they just were under the idea that in order to pursue a profession, you needed to go to, a certain element of schooling and pursue your professional degree after that. And so I just felt that there really wasn't a way for me to make a living off of what I really loved. And so luckily for me, this handsome, dashing fellow sitting next to me came into my life, and he just kind of broke everything down for me. And so I just kind of fell into my element at that point in my life. And, when you really love something and you really start utilizing some of the gifts that you have, it just kind of starts working on its own.
Right.
You know?
And now, how was that conversation with your parents when you said, hey, guess what? You know that engineering thing that I've been working and got a degree in?
I'm
going to
go
a different way.
Actually.
Do they know?
They do.
She pushed Q into the living room. Q, tell them all about it.
Tell my parents what we're about to do.
That was a fun conversation.
That was his job.
As you've got the car running. And you're like,
yeah, it was in an easy conversation, you know.
Right.
They're just very old school and thinking very traditional.
Right, but I would think this is a common, you're not the only person to go through this,
right.
That you have a vision of your life and your parents have a different vision maybe.
Exactly.
And then you have to have this difficult conversation because they're like,
Absolutely.
I think it was me writing those checks to the college a lot of times.
Right. And it's still really hard to believe that we can make a living off of this.
Right.
You know, because where they're from, a professional degree and a professional background is what's going to make you successful in life.
Right.
You know?
And they're not doing this to be mean. They just want you to be secure and
Absolutely.
Safe and have a livelihood that they feel is
right.
more safe and secure. Whereas you're
right.
going, look, I may be going this other way
mm-hmm.
and it may seem unsafe to you, but there's more security because I love it. And this is something I'm enjoying. You're having a higher quality of life, I would think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there is nothing more to be said than when you are going into work every day as happy as you can be.
Right,
doing
as opposed
what you
to
love.
Dreading it and,
yes.
and hating Mondays.
Which is what
right?
I was doing before. So
right.
this is perfect.
Okay, so now walk me through what an engagement looks like because I have a kid.
Uh-huh.
So tell me how, is it only little kids or you do all age kids?
Well, I love working with children under 5.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of my specialty. I just feel like there is just this aspect of innocence that is there and I'm able to connect with the subject more when they're younger, I feel like. That's just who I am. But as a client or as a potential client, we'd have a conversation first. I'd get to know you and your family a little
right.
bit more and your needs in terms of photography. And we determine if we're a good fit for one another, whether I'm the right photographer for you and
right.
whether my style is what you're looking for in terms of capturing your children.
But isn't the product offering you offer something that I don't even know I want yet?
No. Yeah, sometimes
because
it's
like
not.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to hire a photographer because I want just a picture of my kid. But
right.
you're going to tell me, well, I'm going to build this whole storybook,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that I wasn't even aware that existed.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, this is a conversation that we have prior to the actual photo shoot because, if this is something that you want in the end, it determines my shooting style during
mm-hmm.
the session itself. So I'll shoot differently if I'm there to just capture a gigantic portrait to hang into your living room
right.
versus a storybook album that you'll receive in the end. So, yeah, that's a conversation that we have prior to.
So, Q, first of all, just congratulations. Nicely done. Well done. I'm impressed. I know that I married a woman with a little bit of stock, a car, and a home, and I know that that made all the difference in the world. Yep. You married this beautiful lady with obviously a great deal of talent and, yes. and passion. But I got to ask you how it works, a husband and wife business, how do you define the roles, who does what?
You know, it's a lot of time together.
Yeah.
That's a great question. And, yes, that is a lot of time together. And it's kind of like you accept the fact that there's going to be a lot of disagreements. When we started, it was more so that, you know, I noticed that Alice had a passion for this. I went ahead and tried to convince her to go ahead and take the leap. And I think that's the hardest part, where I could have used Sandra's book, The 12 Steps to Entrepreneurship.
Right.
And when we decided to take that leap, it was just the hardest part was just trying to figure out how to start this thing, you know, and she had, she already, you know, you could see the gift and you could see the passion in it. And that's what's was the easy part to sell, you know, it's kind of market. The hard part was just figuring out how to do this, you know, how to start a business, setting up your Incorp, doing all this marketing and things like that. And it was a learning process a few years ago. And thankfully we made through, we got through it, and we were able to formed some great networks, some great partners, and, you know, we just, like Sandra said, we really rely on referrals now, because it's such an intimate process, that's what she does. So it becomes more of a relationship towards the end, because the focus of doing especially what she does is maternity and baby pictures. You know, having a kid ourselves just within the past 2 years, you realize, like, there's just a couple of things that you really want to treasure, and that's probably your wedding and, you know, with the birth of your child.
Yeah.
And you realize, and then understanding that, we realize, like, you know, there's just something to capture here that people would don't appreciate at the time, maybe. But, you know, when they look back on it, we kind of realized or figured that this is something they would treasure for the rest of their lives, the parents as well as the kids, that they can look back on, you know, what the parents had done for them. So we were just, the hardest part was really getting this business going, you know, the first few years.
The marketing side of it, like just getting enough business to make it a business?
Exactly. And, you know, I kept my job for the first couple of years. And
so you had a regular job?
Had a regular job.
And you were doing this on the side?
Doing this on the side. Just I was going to school as well, working in graduate school.
And Alice was just an artist, just all in her studio being creative?
Yes.
Is that what was happening?
And it was great.
It's great for Alice, right?
It was awesome. I love it.
So we were very fortunate. We just worked really hard the first few years, and it managed to pay off for us. You know, obviously there was definitely some luck involved, and we were just very fortunate with the hard work we had. That things turned out for us.
You mentioned partnerships. What are some of the partnerships that help kind of catapult your business to another level?
You know, we really just try to work with, understanding that we want to really focus on children and stuff like that. We managed to work with some very great preschools and stuff like that within the Atlanta area.
So you reached out to the preschools?
We reached out to the preschools.
And then what was the conversation you had with them?
It was just kind of like, and at this time we really didn't have a portfolio or a reference to fall back on. But right. It was just kind of like, we'd love to be a part of your preschool. We'd love to take some pictures for your children, whether it's class pictures and stuff like that, that we all know that schools do. And, you know, it was just kind of like a work in progress, just kind of, as Sandra was saying again, almost like cold calling, you know.
Right.
It wasn't fun. It was definitely not fun. And it was the first couple of years were definitely just learning experiences for sure.
So you'd go into a preschool and then you'd try to do any kind of work you could with them, right? You're saying, hey, I'm flexible, whatever you want, basically. And then once you get in there and you start working with the kids and the parents, then you were slowly building clients, and then one parent's
building
kind of
relationships,
referring you to another neighbor or something. A neighbor sees the picture and goes, where'd you get that?
Exactly.
And then you're growing it. You're earning each client one at a time, huh?
Exactly. So it was a long, slow process. But, you know, we focused our whole, the whole focus was making sure, like, we probably went about it backwards. We were just kind of had the idea that our mission would be just to make sure we treat everybody with just the highest level of integrity, and just the idea that we would just be as open book as possible, that they would know that what they're getting is something that we really believe in, and that they don't have to worry that we're not trying to oversell or do anything like this. This is just something that we have a passion about, and my wife, especially Alice, being so passionate about it, that she just would love to, you know, she just enjoys what she's doing. So we were just trying to convey that to the people we worked with, and thankfully it's worked. You know, she's had been fortunate to work with March of Dimes, found some pictures on her blog, and picked her up for a March of Dimes babies campaign a couple of years ago, and you know, we've just been very fortunate with
that's so much more elegant than like walking around the playground and just right. taking random pictures.
Yeah,
right?
Don't do that.
I thought it was kind of weird. It's kind of scary.
That's probably not a great marketing strategy. So, you two, it sounds like maintain very distinct roles. You don't do a lot of clicking, right?
No,
she handles the clicking.
Do you do any hold light things?
Yes,
you hold the white thing that reflects light. You do that.
I do exactly what I'm told when it comes to the picture time. So
right?
I will not step on the creative.
But that's
boundary.
Important, though. Let's not dismiss your value to the organization because that frees you up, Alice, to practice your mm-hmm. craft. And look, the whole opera falls apart if people don't write you a check for the work
exactly.
you're doing. Right.
And that's where we've just been very fortunate. You know, some people have been entrepreneurs, have been able to do both sides, been able to do the creative and the marketing side, and we've just been able to, it's just been fortunate for us that we're very different in that aspect. You know, she definitely can do the creative side and has all these great ideas and vision, and I'm very just kind of left brain, and I don't mind staying in the back, being behind the desk or being behind a computer or just calling and talking to people and writing things up. So it works out great for us. You know, we're just fortunate that we just kind of are our skill sets kind of mesh together.
Yeah, it seems like they complement each other very well. Now, tell us about this organization you guys started.
Well, when we were starting this photography business, actually, it was we were just having a hard time understanding pricing, understanding marketing, understanding sales for child photography specifically. So, we just kind of brought up with each other one day that, you know, in the next few years, if nothing happens, a resource site would be great for future.
For aspiring
exactly.
child photographers.
Exactly. People who want to come into this industry. And lo and behold, 2-3 years later,
you kept waiting for one to appear?
Yes, exactly.
And you became the change you wanted in the world? Is that what happened?
Exactly.
You can put it that way. That sounds good.
So you decided to start your own organization?
We started to, initially it was going to be a resource site, but then we decided we'd form an organization so we could actually really work, go to vendors and start trying to really work with vendors, trying to get discounts and things like that and packages for our members, for people who were wanting to be in this industry. So we would work with labs and different print labs and boxes and stuff like that, anything that dealt with the kind of create the, I guess, the supply aspect of running a business.
So now did other photographers come out of the woodwork saying, wow, finally somebody's doing this? Like, were they appreciative of your efforts?
Absolutely. I mean, as a photographer, you know, especially starting out in your first few years of businesses, there's just so many elements of what we do specifically that is just not out there. And
right.
so having gone through it recently ourselves, we just realized in this industry specifically there wasn't enough out there information-wise. And
right.
so we just felt it was our role to gather as much information and collaborate with as many different organizations, different vendors, as he said, and give – you know, child photographers a home, a community, and a platform for them to share information and to get together with one another and to grow, you know.
Because that was the biggest problem with this industry is because the wedding industry was so big at the time when we started, mm-hmm. which was
yeah.
about 8 or 9 years ago. And
yeah, you see a lot of wedding photographers out there.
Right. They have like whole expos. There's all
exactly.
kinds of them. It's a whole.
Yeah. And when we were starting out, this particular niche industry, child and family photography, was very small.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it growing so much these days because what happens a lot is mothers end up buying a really nice DSLR to capture their own children, you know, as you would.
Right.
And then they end up falling in love with this craft and finding themselves wanting to learn more and more about taking better pictures of their own children. And then soon their friends see it, you know, on social media
right,
platforms.
And then they can build their own little small
exactly.
boutique business for them
right.
on the side
exactly.
that
right.
works.
And they can
them.
Go after a niche, like
right.
pregnant brides. Could be a niche. Right? I bet nobody's doing that.
I'm not going to go there.
Maybe there should be an association for that as well.
But no, all kidding aside, you guys have found great value in focusing on a niche.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, you are always saying niches.
Brings you riches.
And I think we may be developing yet another chapter for Sandra's a book, but this was a conscious decision, and you found that's really paid off for you. Is that advice that you would offer other photographers is to find a specialty, find a niche, and really
Right, because, you know, taking a picture is taking a picture.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, you could have said seniors or you could have said any niche, but you found a niche that you're passionate about.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. Specializing in a particular niche, I feel like, always separates you from the bunch.
Right.
There's photographers everywhere. Anyone can pick up a camera and learn this craft and be technically really good at what they do. But when you are able to connect with your subject, whether it's a bride, whether it's a pet, you know, a dog, or whether it's a corporate business owner or whether it's a child, I think there's something really to be said about that.
Right. So, you know, a lot of people get afraid, though, because they go, well, if I'm only focusing on that, I'm missing out, you know.
Right.
I'm missing out on all 99% of the population that isn't a kid under five, you know.
But that's what your clients want. The
clients
a specialist, want you
right?
to be an expert at what you do specifically, and they're willing to pay a premium for that.
Right. And that's what I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's what, I mean, I've been preaching forever, but it's just that business people are afraid. They think that they're excluding so many other things.
Absolutely, especially in your first years of business.
Right. You think that it's a risk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most of our members are within the first couple of years of starting their business. And that's the biggest thing, biggest worry we hear is just that.
They don't want to give up work.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, they're just so, you know, and that's the hardest part of, I guess, in our, you know, being our, all our members are basically, you know, small business owners or entrepreneurs, you know, and the biggest part is taking that big jump, because then you realize like your livelihood is relying on this. And that's the complaint that's the worry we get.
It's a fear, right?
Exactly. And
sure.
Well, you know, what we realized that would be a big fear. And we realized that there was a lot of competition out there, because as Alice was talking about, you know, once mothers start picking up that camera and start taking pictures and start thinking that they could do this as a business themselves, you know, there's a lot of people, the competition becomes, you know, pretty competitive out there, let's say that. But, you know, we formed this association because we really believe that, you know, there's plenty to go around. And there was enough, we just wanted an organization where, besides the rest of the industry at large, that there was so little for the child photographer. We just wanted to build a very supportive community where people could just kind of feel like you weren't going to get criticized, you weren't going to get, you know.
They can vent and they can get support and they can get, you know, best practices,
exactly.
Right? Because
exactly.
I'm sure there's some unique challenges when you're photographing children.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then that's different than pets or, you know.
Exactly.
CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was,
you know,
that
and
was
there's
so
tricks in the trade that you all share, right?
Right.
And that's the big part, you know, is that we can, you know, to keep it a membership. We knew that way we could really let people kind of talk, you know, explain things, network with each other, and talk about, you know, how they market, how they do business, how they work with clients,
how
they sale.
A lot on educating our members as
well. Is there misinformation that you have to correct that maybe they think it's one way and then you have
Absolutely. When you're starting off in your first year of business, you really just want to get as much business as possible. And a lot of times people don't really understand the numbers it takes to run a business.
Mm-hmm.
And so we focus a lot on ensuring that our members know, you know, what prices is standard in the industry.
Right.
And so when they are aware of that, that elevates the industry as a whole.
Right.
So that nobody's undercutting anybody, and in that, you know, you are pricing what you're worth and what your images are worth and so forth.
Like, we're trying to, it may be like a strange idea, but we kind of put this association thinking that, you know, we can all kind of grow and become successful together. You know, there doesn't need to be a constant.
Right, it's not a zero sum game.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
There doesn't need to be, you know, undercutting or backstabbing in the sense that, you know, there's just this industry is definitely big enough that everybody should be able to, you know, find their place and find their niche here, you know. So,
well, congratulations on what you guys have accomplished, and I love what you're doing for the market and for the profession. You guys, you should be proud of yourselves. I'm excited for you. And
how are your parents now? They're okay. They're okay.
Work in progress.
Still working on them.
Send them the interview.
Yeah.
So, what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more about your services and this organization?
Yeah, we have. AliceParkPhotography.com. That's my personal portfolio and website. And this association, which is the National Association of Professional Child Photographers, can be found online at napcp.com. That's NAPC. ASCP.com.
And it's for parents. We have a blog site for parents with educational information as well as photographers.
Yes.
And it's not just national.
It's a great place for parents to come and find a photographer in their area.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
great. A wonderful directory of photographers around the world that specialize in children.
Exactly.
So it's a great educational resource for parents as well.
We have about 21 countries and 45 states. So
how many members?
We have just under 800 members.
Wow.
So we've been in three years of the association. So we're just very excited and just thankful for all the support of our members. I mean, we just couldn't do it without them. So, we're just very appreciative for things. So it's great.
Well, what a gift to have you both come in the studio today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Hey, you going to hang out with us while we visit with the next guest?
Absolutely. We can't wait to hear.
Terrific. Well, I got to tell you, Lee, that was like a 15-minute marketing seminar. I mean, talked about distinct roles and the value of niches and focusing on a specific specialty. And then what they've done with partnerships. I mean, those are lessons learned you can take to virtually any
business,
arena.
Right.
So this is going to be a fun segment that we wrap with today. It is my distinct pleasure to introduce CEO with Competitive Sports Analysis. Next up here on Atlanta Business Radio, please welcome to the show, Miss Diane Bloodworth. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
We're doing well. Delighted to have you. I believe we first met very briefly. Was it down at Tech Village? You were busy doing your work down there, and we came and interrupted you?
We were getting a tour, and we saw you busy at work.
I was trying to accomplish something, right? Great. And Tech Village is great. You know, I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I've been in a number of different shared office suites, but I feel like I really belong there. It's such a great environment.
Right. Yeah, they're doing a great job over there.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about CSA. What are you out there trying to do for folks?
Well, we provide highly accurate predictive data for sports. And our initial target market is fantasy sports. So we have both a fantasy football and a fantasy baseball product. And we help that fantasy GM win their league.
And so you help them win? So there's money at stake for some of them, right?
Well, yeah, and bragging rights, too.
Well, that's
these guys are highly competitive. Trust me, I've talked to a lot of them, and they're very serious about this.
So now, how'd you get into this?
Well,
my big fantasy player?
Actually, no. You know, I know I look like I am.
A big data player?
Yeah.
Like data and analytics?
That's it. My background is I started my career with IBM, so I've been in the technology industry my entire career. But I love sports. I have a passion for sports, especially football. So a few years ago, I decided I wanted to combine the two and pursue my passion. And hearing these other entrepreneurs talk, I love it. I love it when people pursue their dreams,
That's right.
That's what it's all about. So I did this. And initially, though, I went after college coaches. So if you can imagine me going in and talking to these college coaches.
So you were helping them recruit?
We were looking at both game planning data where they could predict the opponent's strategy and scout and self-scout.
They should never punt, right?
They should
Isn't
never,
there data on
there
that?
There is statistical data to support that. But
right? Is that true?
Yeah.
But no coach has the guts to do that.
No coach has the guts to do that.
But that's true, though, right?
Statistically, that is true. But, you know, I really couldn't get them to bite on the data, and I think they wanted to see it proven. But I got a lot of good feedback from them, talked to someone at Turner Sports and decided to do a pivot and go after fantasy sports.
Right.
But I'm not giving up on the coaches. I'm still talking to them. And what they are interested in, it's interesting you said that, they would love to see recruiting data.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
It's that edge.
You know, they need a little edge.
So now, you're not giving up on that. You're still going.
I'm a very persistent person.
You're a big Moneyball fan?
I read Moneyball years ago before it was even cool.
Before Brad even started doing it.
Before Brad Pitt was
when it was a blog post or something, that guy. Yeah. Right. So now when you're looking at that kind of data, and sports is so not only is there facts, but there's also, you know, performing under pressure. There's a lot of subjectiveness to that kind of data. How do you manage that?
Absolutely. And that's what makes us different is we combine both objective and subjective data. And we recently got a patent on a particular algorithm that we have.
Who's clutch? You have a clutch algorithm?
But we look at the statistical data, and that drives some of the skill ratings. But we look at other ratings for a quarterback, for example. Not only do they have passing accuracy, but they have arm strength and awareness of the field and poise in the pocket. And so we can add whatever skill set we want to. And we have experts that help us set up the parameters.
But can you do that? Look, a person who completes a pass at 3rd and 7 is different than somebody who completes a pass 1st and 10, right? There's a different level of stress. and pressure involved.
Yes.
Or the last 2 minutes of a game as opposed to the first 2 minutes of a game.
We can look at situation-specific type.
That's amazing. You can get down to that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, that's more in the game planning than in the fantasy sports side, but absolutely, yeah.
So I want to get your take, since you are a mathematician or something along those lines. You understand data. We just came off of doing a remote broadcast for Oracle Applications Users Group, and a big theme there was big data. Is that having any impact in your world at all?
Well, certainly. I mean, it's kind of the trend. I mean, it's the buzzword right
now. Right, right.
Big data. And my vision is, I believe data is going to make a difference in sports. Traditionally, data has not been as much of a player as video and some other things.
Right.
But I believe data and analytics are going to change the competition of sports. And we want to be early to market and providing some of those key data points that are helpful.
Now, can it go beyond sports? Can you get this data and analytics based on a kid in high school, just scholastically, and their activities and things like that? Couldn't you use the same type of metrics and then try to see what kind of a path a kid would be most productive in their life?
Well, certainly. I mean, we're not set up for that.
Right, but you're not. But theoretically, shouldn't it be the same things? You're just pulling metrics.
You're pulling data points that have some indicator of performance, right?
And then you have performance, and then you compare them and say, was this accurately kind of predictive?
And you look at fit,
right?
And that's what some of the subjective things give you is fit as well.
So tell us about the startup aspect of this thing. That you had a real job in a big company, and then
what do your IBM folks think of what you're doing?
No, it's got to be kind of scary though when you're jumping.
It's very scary. And this is my second business. So I left IBM and started my first business, which was an IT consulting company, a process consulting.
But that's like logical. They're probably accepted.
Yeah, they accepted that.
Yeah, that makes sense,
right?
And that business got acquired, and I was in Washington D.C. And then I decided to move to Atlanta, closer to where I grew up, and decided to do this business. And you're right. This one's kind of, as someone told me,
a little out there, huh?
I'm off the reservation is what a potential investor told me.
But you've been through this then. You had an exit. Walk us through that a little bit. Yeah. How does that we don't know anything about this, right?
Right. Like, talk about that. You had your IT, was it consultancy? And then so you're out there and somebody pokes around and says, hey, Diane, I like what you're doing. And then
Here's a check.
It was just that easy.
Like it started on a Friday and Monday you're cashing a check at the bank?
That's exactly right. No. I had grown the business. We had about 30 employees, so we were doing pretty well. We had government contracts. We were in the D.C. area.
Right.
And we'd won a DOD contract that was attractive to someone that knew us, that we'd partnered with in the space. And so they approached us acquiring us. And 9 months later,
you birthed.
The deal was done.
But is that when someone acquires another company, are they buying what you have or they're thinking that I can fix it and make it better and it'll be worth more down the road?
I think it's some of both. Mm-hmm. In this case, they were really interested in the contract vehicles that we had in that particular
already
space.
In place. Mm-hmm. So they didn't think like, oh, I can parlay this into something much larger. They're just like, hey, I can just take this and ride this for a while.
We're trying to diversify and we would like to get into
And then data. We get into this space automatically without doing any work. Just it's cheaper for them to buy you
Absolutely.
Than it is to grow it themselves.
Exactly.
And then in the very beginning of this first startup, you accessed a bunch of money, threw a bunch of money at it, or you bootstrapped it and clawed your way through the marketing, or how did you approach
Feels
that?
Feels like a lot of clawing, but some of both. I mean, I had a little bit of capital. At this point, we've been self-funded. But, you know, initially we developed a prototype for coaches. So, you know, I would go out and say, hey, I'm not just a chick with a laptop. I have something here I think you might want to see, you know.
Right.
And they were all very respectful and nice and gave me good feedback. But then it was just too tough to get any traction there. So it's been an interesting – I should write a book.
You should.
And title it A Chick with a Laptop.
A Chick with a Laptop.
Yeah, that's a good title.
That's pretty – but isn't it hard or harder in the beginning with a startup too? Hire the good talent, get the good technology, use the good – I mean, all that stuff costs money, right?
It costs money. There's not very many people, I think, that want to work for free or work for equity. Let's face it. We all need to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of challenges finding the right people. I am fortunate in the space I'm in. Guys love it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They're knocking down my door to come work with
Can
me.
Can I intern? I want to intern just to win their own fantasy game.
Exactly.
Kevin is all over this.
I know.
Yeah. That's the good news. So, and, you know, it took a little time to find the right developer team, right. But I've got that in place now. I've got two high-stakes fantasy sports experts who play mm-hmm. in the $100,000 prize leagues who wow. really know this and know what they're doing. And they're really – Nelson is one of those, and he's the face of our product, mm-hmm. not me, which is good. I run the company, right. and I'm good with that.
Right. All right, so how does it work? Kevin is obviously excited about it. Is it something Kevin yeah. can buy or subscribe to
yeah,
right now?
Yeah, and we'll have to hook Kevin up. With
get your credit card out, Kev.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Nothing's free, Kevin, just so you know.
So it's all set up. There's a whole yeah, mechanism. And...
Yes, absolutely.
So it's out of beta? This is actually out there
yeah,
in the market?
Yeah, it is out in the market. We're always enhancing and improving and doing some new things, scoutpro.com, uh-huh. and you can subscribe for the season. And like I said, we'll make sure Kevin gets a free subscription so he can
wow.
talk He's us up in the market.
That'll keep him here but, for another couple months, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. You got to have those little
right,
incentives.
The perks.
Right.
It's all
you
about
have
the perks.
It really is. And what we do is we help you'll relate to this. We help the user optimize their roster. And this year, we're going to be able to import all the league rules and everything that is unique to your particular team and league and tell you which players you should start and which you should sit. We'll do some trade analysis for you and help you with your draft.
Wow. And who'd you bring with you?
This is Michael Ferris, and he is with the Aspire Group. And, you know, you talk about having the right pieces in place to make this really yeah. successful. We were missing the marketing and sales. That's not my background. My background is business and technology, right. but not really a marketing and sales. And I was fortunate enough to be introduced to the Aspire Group I'm in a program called Launchpad 2X that Bernie Dixon, she's the chair of ATA, mm-hmm. and she has formed this group for women-owned businesses, women entrepreneurs. And through that organization, I was able to meet.
Tell us more about that organization. Is that a large group? Is there a lot of you out there?
There is not a lot of us yet. I was in the first class.
Oh, it was a class?
Uh-huh.
And how many others were in the class?
Great. There were about 10 other women in the class, and we still have our own masterminds group. We meet monthly uh-huh. and continue.
Is there a second class? Or
there is. She's planning another. It's Launchpad 2X, 2X for 2X chromosomes, and Kennesaw State supports this, and I believe the registration, if you'd like to apply,
yeah.
and I can get you guys the details, but it's through Kennesaw State.
Yeah, we'd love to do what we can to support
Absolutely.
You. Are these existing, or they're beginning companies typically?
She really is looking for existing companies that are ready to grow to that next level.
Right.
There are some other organizations like Startup Chicks who, right. help, who help you get started, and I participated in that a couple of years ago.
And you graduated.
And then I moved up to then I went into Launchpad 2X. So I take advantage of everything that's out there.
And has that been a strategy for you throughout your career, is to get involved in those kind of support slash networking groups?
You know what? You need it. It is very difficult to start a business, and you need like-minded people.
Like-minded, but you need people to tell you, like,
When your baby's ugly.
Right? Don't you need that? It can't be everybody telling you you're the smartest person in the world.
No, it doesn't really help you improve.
Right.
All right, so I want to hear from Michael. Tell us more about Aspire.
Okay. Well, the Aspire Group is actually an Atlanta-based company. We're out of West Midtown is where our corporate headquarters are.
So Midtown has an east and a west?
We
I
like
did
to
not
say
know
so.
That. West Midtown. Okay.
Yeah. We even have our own signs. So
so what are you guys doing for folks?
Well, we are a global sports marketing and entertainment company. We have properties and partners in the United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States. And we have three different businesses that we get involved with. Primarily, we're within the fan relationship management center business, which in essence is outsourcing revenue opportunities for collegiate properties or pro properties. Mostly, we work in the collegiate space within the United States. We don't like to say we sell tickets, but we sell fan experiences. So all of our staff is called sales consultants, and they work with individuals to create the best experience they can for their game day. And that's taking inbound and outbound calls at some of our properties, or we actually manage the box office and also work with premium seating in a lot of our properties. Our second business function is actually within strategic consulting and market research, mm-hmm. which is where we've partnered with Diane, working with her marketing and sales plan. And lastly, we do work with asset acquisition and actually looking for owners of particular sport properties and doing financial planning and actually how do they go about reforming that business.
See, niches brings you riches.
I know. Look at this. It's the theme today. And have you always done this? Did you come from a different industry sector before doing this kind of work?
Well, our company was
Are you caught for the Cincinnati Reds, or what'd you do?
Well, actually, I was in Cincinnati, so I'm a big Reds fan, so I like the reference. Our company was founded 5 years ago with Bernie Mullen, who was 30 years in the industry, working for the Colorado Rockies, Pittsburgh Pirates, started in academia, actually went into the professional world. So he was a senior vice president of the MBA and started their team marketing and business operations, which is in essence their internal research organization. And then he was the president of the Atlanta Hawks and the Atlanta Spirit for a few years. Got out of that and was doing consulting, going back and forth from the Dodgers, the National Hockey League, and the CFL, the Canadian Football League. And he started working with Georgia Tech, and they wanted him to break down how they're selling tickets, how they should do it. And he presents them with the consulting project, and they said, "We don't want to sell tickets. We don't know how to sell tickets. We don't kind of like selling tickets.
Why don't you just do this for me?
You can do it for me."
Right.
And they're like, and you're like, okay, I guess we can do it for you, right?
Well,
and the business was born.
The business was born, and it's been great. We've doubled in size and revenue every single year. And we were recently named the 9th fastest growing company in Atlanta. So it's been an exciting time for us.
Now, who found who, Diane? Did you find them or they found you?
I was introduced to Bernie through one of the Launchpad 2X advisors, Julia Rossi. Yeah. So I had done a pitch and she said, "There's somebody I want to introduce you to. He's really busy, but I think he'll take the time and sit down and have coffee with you." And so I met Bernie at the Disco Kroger Starbucks there, right across from ATV.
Right.
And 2 hours later, we were still talking, and we knew that it was a good fit. And then he introduced Michael, and, you know, Michael's a fantasy sports GM, so he loves this. And they suggested, as a part of this marketing and sales strategy, we want to get in and do a survey, because what we're doing is a little new. The analytics side, there's a lot of data out there. There's almost an overwhelming amount of data. But what we do with the predictive analytics is new, and they're helping us position that, brand it, and make sure people really get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we can even design a marketing and sales plan, the first thing is you have to create the roadmap and understand what your consumers want. And what we know about the fantasy industry is there's 35 million people playing fantasy sports. And most of them are spending over $450 on fantasy sports and playing it
each
in leagues.
Yeah, that's a lot of zeros.
I thought it was free. Fantasy is not free?
Well, you might play for free, but then you're betting with your friend, right? So you have more money on the table than you think.
And two-thirds of the people now pay to play. Yes. It's very few people that play for free now. You can't.
Really?
No. And so they're spending $450, you know, primarily playing fantasy football, which is one of the specialties for Diane. And they're spending all this money, and they're usually going to four different sites to get all their fantasy advice. So what we're working towards is trying to figure out why they're going to those sites, what are those key things they're looking for in terms of content. There's a good amount of research done with fantasy sports in the academic space or whether through professional organizations, but no one has delved into the actual decision-making process for fantasy players, and that's what we're trying to do with the research.
So now walk us through, like, if somebody has a team, how are they – right now you say they're going to four sites. So what's their thought process? How are they typically doing it now? And then how do you want them to do it with the Diane's tool?
Well, what we have found through, you know, kind of anecdotally talking through focus groups and our preliminary research stages is that they really like to make themselves feel like they're making the decisions. So
Kevin over here nodding.
Yeah. You know, they'll go to these four different sites and pull the information, but somehow it ends up being their choice to do certain things.
So, like, even though everyone says, you know, draft Drew Brees, so they think, hey, I just thought of this on my own.
Yeah. Oh, I watched him play for the Saints that one day. He looked pretty good. And so what we found predominantly, they're trying to make these decisions by themselves. They want to feel this pride within them. And so we have to figure out a way that we can give them that ownership of Diane's tool.
So Diane's tool is really telling them what to do, but they have to think that they've thought of it themselves.
Exactly.
So there's some psychology there. That's nice. Not just kind of a blatant pick these players, right?
Well, and there's different levels of players. There's entry-level people who are just learning how to play up to the high-stakes players who are playing, you know, like I said, for $100,000, $200,000 prize pots.
Right.
So
we
have to find a way to really appeal and attract a majority of these different levels.
But are the heavy users the ones that are going for the big money, or are the heavy users the ones that are just doing this as a goof?
Traditionally, the heavy users are the ones that are going for the big money, and they're willing to look at a lot of statistics and analytics.
So they want the edge.
But then there's a tier below that. They're the wannabes. They want to be these serious guys that are in
the
these that go to Vegas for their draft.
But I wouldn't want help, too. I've never played any fantasy anything. Right now, if I did it, I'd have to pick them like I pick a dog at the track, you know, like on what they do or what
the
they
look. Color of their
but
uniform.
I would love to have a little simple little interface that made me feel just a little smarter and like I'd done a little bit of homework. So that's very attractive to me.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's something that we've come across. The people that are not actually getting into fantasy sports, they're kind of nervous.
Yeah.
They don't understand it.
Right.
And all their friends, they're like,
right,
well,
like maybe everybody at the office is doing it, and they're like, hey, do you want to be on the, you know, on in this kind of office pool type thing? And I don't want to do all the work, so can I just press a button and you're just telling me every week what to do?
Yeah, that's what Diane's been able to do. It's almost like we're the time. They complain about, I don't have the time to play fantasy sports. Well, Diane's product gives you the time to play fantasy sports.
Nice. Boy, he is a marketing guy.
Yeah, that was good.
That was very well done. I made a good choice, Dan.
Yes, you did.
And very fast growing, one of the fastest growing organizations in Atlanta. Is that accurate?
That is very accurate, yes.
And so, what's new next? Where are you going to be putting your energy and effort in the coming months? You got some cool stuff on the horizon that you're allowed to talk about?
Well, we do. We're, like I said, we're primarily in the collegiate space. We work in Canadian football, rugby, and soccer throughout the world. Really looking to move into minor league baseball and other different venues, as well as getting into donations for universities. On a technology side, we're very curious about big data. So we're talking over to 1.25 million sports fans each year through outbound calls and through our interactions in stadiums. So if we can figure out a way to create an aggregation of all that data and to be able to use that for the industry and, you know, hopefully monetize it, that's the way we want to go.
And what's the pain that a prospective client for you is having that they should call you?
Most often it's that they don't understand their consumers. A lot of what we're finding is that individuals in sports, they like to take the darts and throw them at the wall and see what sticks. And we like to just solve any needs they might have on their fans. So right now you're seeing with in-venue stadiums is that people are not coming out to games anymore. They want to sit in the man cave. It's comfortable.
Right,
they have
with
air
your
conditioning.
60-inch TV that you're seeing in HD that's, you know, better than you're sitting in the nosebleed seats.
And your beer is 30% less than what you might pay in the stadium.
Right.
So we have to figure out ways to combat that. You're seeing that with the Atlanta Falcons. We were talking about that this morning with Diane about they actually are kind of designing an in-stadium man cave for people who are engaged with fantasy sports into their new arena. So if we can figure out ways for new properties to discover what fans are doing and how they're changing their life cycle, and we can learn how to get them in the stadium.
Right. You got to create that experience that makes it worth me dropping the money that it costs to go there to make it worth my while.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So before we wrap, let's get contact information
yes,
for everybody here. We'll start with Aspire, best way for people to learn more.
Well, if you want to learn more about the Aspire Group, you can go to our website at theaspiregroupinc.com. You can also search the Aspire Group on LinkedIn, Twitter, or on Facebook as well.
And Diane?
ScoutPro.com is where we provide our analytics and sell our fantasy sports product. And CompetitiveSportsAnalysis.com is the corporate website. And our Twitter, and make sure you follow us on Twitter, CSA ScoutPro. We have a good following.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.